Local radio for Portsmouth.
And here we are just after 7 o'clock. Thanks for coming tonight. Here we are then on a Thursday and Sunday night, of course, here from now until 9 o'clock. This is Express This Week. Good evening to you as well. This is Chris Pearce with us. Look back to what's been going on across our patch of Portsmouth and South Sea Townships the last 7 days. Busy show for you tonight. Lots to talk about, lots to get through, lots to squeeze in for the next couple of hours or so on our 10th anniversary show. I can't even say it. 10th anniversary show. That's how excited we are tonight, the 10th anniversary show. On the show tonight, we're talking in about 10 minutes or so to Professor Liz Bentley. Liz from the Royal Meteorological Society. She's our guest in about 10 minutes. We're talking climate change, of course, and all the extreme weather we've had and temperatures as well. Is this a norm? We'll find out more with Professor Liz for chats in about 10 minutes here or so on the show tonight. And later at 7:25, in conversation with Roger Maber. Roger, we spoke to him, must have been about 18 months ago, in actual fact, but we're talking about the Freemasons. Yeah, normally called a secret society, but they're not actually. They do a hell of a lot for charity, and we'll catch up with Roger Maber about that, from the Hampshire and Olerites Freemasons, to be correct. And Roger here at 7:25 tonight for a chat here on the show tonight. Later, turn our attention at 7:45 to Memorial and Gosport from the Submariners Association, and Steve Thorpe will be having a chat with us about that and the importance, of course, of this latest memorial for Submariners. We'll find out more with Steve in about 7:45 tonight. We'll chat to him on the show tonight. Later, we'll turn our attention at 8:10 to Martin Selman. Martin from the Portsmouth and District Landlords Association. Might have seen him hitting the headlines for the last 7 days or so, of course, about HMOs, which is the House of Multiple Occupancy. I think that's the correct title, but we'll talk more about that. A rage of war, they're saying in the local press this week, with Portsmouth City Council. Martin Selman here later for a chat about that at 8:10 tonight here on the show. Profile guest tonight at 8:25. It's been a while since we had her on the show. She may tell us why she's disappeared for a wee while, but our profile guest tonight here on the programme a little bit later is Rachel Hall. Rachel from the RSPCA Stubberton Arc. We'll have a chat about that. What's the latest campaigns, how we can help and get involved, and of course, the cost of living crisis and the effects of keeping animals as well. So we'll chat all about that to Rachel and hear two of her songs as well later tonight at 8:25 as our profile guest. We're squeezing all that in here on the show tonight before now and 9 o'clock tonight. Let's talk about climate change with Professor Liz Bentley from the Royal Meteorological Society. Professor Liz, how the devil are you? Right?
Yeah, good evening. Very well, thank you.
Good.
It's been a busy few weeks for us in the weather trade.
I bet it has indeed. Non-stop, I'd imagine, because it has been very extreme. We haven't really experienced conditions like this since, 1976 at the earliest, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So particularly if you're thinking about the drought conditions, yeah, it's very comparable to where we were in 1976. The heat, though, way above that, and record-breaking heat. So we saw our highest ever temperature recorded in the UK at the end of July, 40.3. Never thought I'd see 40 degrees in this country in my kind of time as a meteorologist, but there it is. Put it out there.
And record-breaking for all the wrong reasons, really, I suppose, in some way. We've had all sorts of dramatic weather events, and now we're following up with flash flooding and things like that. But, I mean, Europe's had it pretty bad too, isn't it? Not just us.
Yeah, so the heat wave and the drought, it's been spread pretty much, for the first half of the summer, pretty much across western parts of Europe, so Spain, Portugal, France. You'll have seen, I'm sure, images of wildfires coming from, widespread, particularly across France. Over recent weeks, that heat has now shifted to the eastern part of Europe. So we're now seeing places like Finland breaking their temperature records. So, yeah, it's just moved further east. And I think it looking towards the end of next week, as we head towards the bank holiday, we might start to see it shift back in our direction and bring some more of that heat back. I don't think record-breaking temperatures, but certainly some hot weather again as we get to the bank holiday weekend.
Yeah. Is it to do with the jet stream? How does it work, Liz?
Yeah, so it is the jet stream. So that gives us high pressure. So the jet stream is a long way further north, which it tends to do during summer months. and that allows high pressure to build. And but it's been a very large area of high pressure, and it hasn't moved for weeks on end. So that heat started to build across Spain and Portugal, and then moved into France, and then eventually up into the UK at the end of July, and then it kind of stuck around in France a while and came back into the UK for a little bit. So it's really been allowing that heat to build and build and build, and that's led to, you know, really high temperatures. But I would say, and you mentioned climate change at the beginning, because of climate change, because we've seen the global average temperatures go up by a degree or so, we've just turned that thermostat up, that background temperature up a notch or two. So when we get these heat events, they're just, you know, they're much more intense than these record-breaking temperatures than we've ever seen before.
It is very scary, because obviously there's still some countries out there who are not really taking, I don't want to say not taking it seriously, but sort of in denial almost that this is actually happening.
Yeah, and you look at some of the governments around the world, they're not making pledges to move towards, say, a net zero world and reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. And it will take examples of these extreme weather events in their country, on their doorstep, for them to sit up and think, actually, we need to start thinking about doing something, because the cost of these extreme weather events is starting to rack up, really. So they, in one sense, they can be quite helpful when you get extreme events. Here in the UK, I mean, we have made a pledge, the government has made a pledge to get to net zero by 2050. But you look at, you know, the extreme heat that we've had recently and at the end of July, our infrastructure just is not built for temperatures around, you know, 40 degrees. And so we've seen lots of problems with the roads melting. There were runways at Luton Airport starting to buckle, and the railway lines buckling. So we're really going to have to think in this country about how we become more resilient to these heat events, because they're not going to go away. We're going to see more of these in the future. And so adapting and becoming more resilient when we get the heat events and the long drought events, and, you know, then followed by some flooding events, all of these things, quite extreme events, we just need to be much more resilient to coping with those kind of extreme weather events.
And as a small country like us, I guess we can only do so much, can't we?
Yeah, we can, and actually size can help us when we particularly think about drought. So during the course of the whole year, we probably have enough rainfall in this country, so we need to be cleverer at capturing that rain more when it falls during typically the winter months, and then using it when we have the deficit like we've had over the last couple of months. And so building more reservoirs, but we can move that water around. It's a small island nation, and again, the drought hasn't been everywhere. It's really been particularly confined to kind of southern and eastern parts, whereas if you're further north or west of you in Scotland at the moment, you know, they're wondering probably what all the fuss is about.
Yes.
So how can we move that water where there is a surplus at the moment to places where there's a deficit, and maybe thinking about actually using the kind of river and canal networks to move things around a little bit more. So I think we do have to be cleverer, but we certainly have enough rainfall in this country. It's just about how we use it and share it and move it around.
It's a little bit of irony, I suppose, really, because we are an island nation, aren't we? Mm. Surrounded by water, and there we are, we're having difficulties with water.
Yeah, and there are, I mean, London has a desalination plant that takes salt water from the sea and turns it into kind of fresh water, drinking water, but it is very expensive to do that, both from a cost perspective, but also from an environmental perspective. So although, you know, that could be a long-term solution if all else fails, I wouldn't put that at the top of the list. As I say, we do get enough fresh water falling from the skies in the UK. You know, we're typically a wet country, but we're having to get used to these periods where we get torrential rain leading to flooding, and how we can capture that rain when it falls. So that we can use it when we have these longer hot periods. And, you know, we look at the climate models, it suggests that we're going to see hotter, drier summers going forward. So the kind of summer we've just had are going to become much more normal as we go forward into the future.
We talked about the future, you mentioned there, of course, about looking into the future. The next sort of few days or so, I mean, is it looking better, or are we expecting some more heat waves on the horizon?
Yeah, so the next few days we're a little bit more unsettled. So we've lost that high pressure. It's moved further across eastern parts of Europe, and westerly and low pressure systems coming in off the Atlantic are replacing, you know, that high pressure. So we've had some thunderstorms, and I've been doing a few media interviews in the last few days, kind of talking about the fact that these thunderstorms are kind of the wrong type of rain. So I guess we welcome any rain after a drought, the problem is when you get really heavy downpours falling on bone dry ground, it just runs off and you get this flash flooding. And we've seen lots of kind of images, little videos on social media of places just flooding because, you know, the amount of rain that's fallen on the hard ground. This weekend, it's all eyes on a weather system coming in. I think probably western parts of the UK are going to get most of the rainfall. The further east and south, so for our patch, I guess less likely to see. But Sunday's the most likely day, I think, of any rainfall this weekend. And then as we move towards the bank holiday weekend, high pressure starts to pick up again. So things start to settle down. And as I say, if we get that shift of that heat back across from Europe, then, you know, we could start to see those temperatures rising again towards the bank holiday.
OK, not as intense as what it was previously, though?
No, I don't think so. And it's certainly not the record-breaking temperatures. But, no. You know, if we pull some of that heat in, we could get up to the kind of high 20s, maybe possibly low 30s on the cards. But certainly settling down again. And I think that's particularly bad news for the drought conditions because, you know, realistically, we need weeks of rain. Mm. And so, you know, a bit of rain this week and a little bit over the weekend is not going to be enough to turn things around. We need, you know, a lot of kind of weather systems coming in. I'm sure if people are on their school holidays at the moment, they don't want all this rain to come in. But certainly from the drought perspective, that's really what we need at the moment, just to replenish those rivers and reservoirs.
Yeah. And how can we do our bit, finally, Liz?
Yeah, I guess two things. If you're thinking about droughts, it's about just reducing your consumption of water as best you can, really. I think in this country, we take water for granted. We very rarely have shortages of water, so we're quite, you know, happy to leave the tap running when we're brushing our teeth and use the hose pipe quite, you know, in the garden and things. So we just need to think a little bit more carefully about using water, you know, a little bit less. So the hose pipe bans that have come in obviously will restrict people, but, you know, thinking about how you can do that. So maybe have a shower instead of a bath, for example. Regarding climate change, I think we all need to think about how we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions and just limit any extra warming, because the warmer the atmosphere becomes, the worse these extreme events are going to become for us and elsewhere. So just thinking about how we can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, so that's less use of cars, and thinking about changing your diet a little bit. So some small changes can be made, but we do need to make some big changes that are probably need to be driven more by governments, you know, policy changes and so forth to make the big changes.
Well, Liz, I'm sure we'll come back to this story. It's ever evolving, and it's not all doom and gloom, because it's fascinating to sort of, you know, see what's happening, see what's going on. But there's a serious side to it at the end of the day as well, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah, and I think, you know, I appreciate people really want to enjoy some warm summer sunshine, but when it gets those high, it does become much more dangerous, doesn't
absolutely.
It, those temperatures.
Well, interesting enough, I've got the Chief Exec of Portsmouth Water on next week on the show to chat about things down here, because I know we're very lucky, actually, in this in the Portsmouth area, because we're not part of the hosepipe bans in some parts. Southern Water have imposed some restrictions, so we are sort of blessed in this area, in this transmission area, so we're quite lucky. With water springs and things like that, they drill down to get the water out or something.
Absolutely. So I think that's very fortunate, isn't it, as I say, but not too far down the road, there are those host pipe
absolutely,
bands.
So we have to be thankful for something. Liz, it's a pleasure as always to talk to you. I'd love to come back to you again in the future, but Liz Bentley for now, thanks for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
Take care, lovely. Cheers, Liz. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Professor Liz Bentley there, chatting to us from the Royal Meteorological Society here on Express this week.
Local radio for Portsmouth. This is Express FM.
We'll turn our attentions to the Freemasons, who do a lot of stuff for charity. They're not just a secret society. It's all a myth. I'm sure my next guest will confirm that for us from the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Freemasons. Roger Maber joins me on the line now. Roger, how are you? All right?
Yes, good evening, Chris.
Good.
And thank you for inviting me back on your show again.
It's a pleasure. It's been, what we were saying, 18 months, isn't it, also, I think, last time we chatted?
It is, yes.
Wow.
Yes, it was, yes.
Time's long. It certainly does. There's so much has happened in that time, Roger, as well. And I suppose it's nice for you as an organisation to do things look just a little bit more normal than before.
Yes, indeed, because you remember when I was speaking to you on your show the last time, I'd spoke to you about a group of Freemasons who came up with a fantastic initiative to stay in touch during the lockdown and continue to meet up with, well, continue to stay in touch and raise money for local charities. And during that lockdown, they raised £26,000
wow.
for local charities. But now, as you say, we're back to normal. Still raising money, though.
Yeah, and the importance has never gone away. There's always this myth, though, Roger. I mean, for benefit of new listeners, because I think we've touched on this in the past, but you're not a secret society, as many people may think, are you?
No, we're definitely not. In fact, we were exhibiting at the recent Portsmouth Kite Festival, and if anybody's visiting the Farnborough or the British Motor Show at Farnborough this weekend, we've got a stand there, so drop in and see us.
And that's the thing, because you do so much for local charities and help out many charities. And you've done that fairly recently as well. Tell us.
We have. Well, it was from a conversation I'd had with the editor of the Portsmouth News, who was interested in what we'd been doing during the lockdown. And he said he'd like to see if there's something we can do together. And, well, cut a long story short, we formed a partnership called the Community Trust, in which the local paper was inviting readers to nominate worthy charities that they would like to see receiving some money to help them with their activities. And we've had a number of events which were we've been called cash awards evenings across Portsmouth, Gosport, and we've got one coming up in Fareham in October.
So the idea then of that is you want local organisations to get in contact.
Yeah, certainly, yes. To get in contact, if they read the Portsmouth News, and I'm sorry, that's maybe cutting across your territory a little bit, but they advertise it regularly in the news to write into the news with details of charities which they feel deserve money. And over the last year, we've given money to a dozen or so charities. Motivate recently in Havant, which is a youth support an activity organisation. Cosham Larder, which is run by a lady in Cosham, helping people with food parcels, etc. Solent Therapy in Port Leon Solent. The Rainbow Centre, who I'm sure you all know. MHA Communities, Fareham Monday Club, and a number of others over the last year that have received money at these cash awards evenings. And we've been blessed with having a number of dignitaries at the evening. We had Penny Mordaunt, the MP for North Portsmouth, came along to our Portsmouth evening, and Caroline Dynage, the MP for Gosport, was at Gosport. In fact, we involved them in our selection of the nominations. We asked them to work with us and the editor of the news to select the charities which are going to receive money. So they do play a part, and they come along and help us basically present the checks.
Yeah, it's quite a difficult thing. We've got all these organisations, you look at them and you think they're all sort of worthy, aren't they? That's the thing, worthy recipients.
They're all worthy, but and clearly we can't support all of them, but we do our best to spread it as much as we can.
Yeah, spread the love. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Worthwhile charities
and obviously
too.
Not just what we're doing with the news, but generally through support of charities through the year, we've given money to many other organisations in the area. Age Concern, there was a new hospice in Winchester who actually were buying a number of what they called cuddle beds, which would enable the patients they've got in there to spend some time with their loved ones together. And these very sophisticated, which are basically enlarged hospital beds with all sorts of sophisticated equipment on them, which allows them to lie with their close partners, their friends, their family, and spend a bit of close time with them, called cuddle beds. And they're £20,000 each, and we help them with one of those beds.
Wow. Now, this is all throughout the generosity of local businessmen, isn't it?
Well, no, it's from our members, purely. It comes out of the pockets of Freemasons and their families. We don't raise money outside of the organisation.
Okay.
So it's all our own money.
So for the benefit of listeners, just tell us how that network works, basically, for us, Roger.
Well, the money that was through the community chest is raised on a raffle that we hold at our meetings. And people, give them money. Sorry, we put gifts into the raffle, prizes into the raffle that people then take part in, pay money to, or members take part to pay in, and then sometimes they put the money back in again the following week. They don't always take the prizes. We raise money through events through standing orders that we have within our lodges to give to charity. Just very a mixture of means of actually being able to give to charity.
Yeah, and it's fabulous, and some of the work that you do as well. And that's thing, isn't it? It breaks. I mean, because obviously people used to think, oh, the Masons work, the Secret Society, or the Golden Handshake Brigade, or all these sorts of things. But I mean, you do so much for local organisations, and as you say, it's not exactly that at all, is it?
No, not at all. And of course, nationally, I think probably over £5 million has gone to various charities. Of course, Freemasons throughout the country. There's 175,000 Freemasons in England and Wales. So you can see that we've got a good number of people, and collectively we raise amongst ourselves money and support as many charities as we can, from small local charities to the fact that I think nationally we gave £500,000 to help the refugees in Ukraine at the time when they needed it.
Wow. So there's lots of work that goes into it that people don't realise what you do and things like that. If people want to find out more about, obviously, with the work that you do with the Freemasons, they can go onto your website, I guess.
Go onto our website, hansiowfreemasons.org.
OK, and there's details on there of how to, I guess, perhaps get involved?
Certainly anybody who's any men who are interested in joining, they would be very welcome. There's also we have Lady Freemasons, and they're members of the OWF, Order of Women Freemasons, their website is owf.org.uk. So ladies, if they want to get involved, we'd be delighted, all of us would be delighted to see you joining us.
Okay, and they're basically a mirror image of what you do.
Yes, indeed. In fact, the ladies were working with us within the community chest and raising the money for those local charities. And they're also working with us. In fact, they're up in Farnborough as we speak, preparing the stand for this coming weekend. And they'll be sharing the stand with us there.
Fantastic.
So we do work together.
Yeah, yeah, lovely stuff. Well, good luck with that. I hope it goes well. And I think you should be okay with the weather. Who would have said that 6 weeks ago?
No, there was no doubt in it 6 weeks ago.
Now we're thinking, is it going to rain? Oh, not too sure. But fingers crossed it won't. You'll have a successful weekend anyway there, Roger. Regards to everyone there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on tonight, Roger. This is good stuff as well. And again, if people want to inform, if you're a charity and you want to get involved with this, community chest, to get in touch with you. That's the idea.
The evening is on October the 15th, but contact the news before then, but the public are welcome along to those evenings anyway to see what we're doing and see the checks being presented.
Fabulous stuff. Roger Maber, pleasure to talk to you, sir. I'm sure we'll come back to you again, but for now, thanks for coming on tonight. Cheers, Roger.
Thank you, Chris.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
To you. Take care. Bye-bye. Roger Maber there from the Hampshire Nolwite Freemasons. And again, as Roger said, if you want to find out more information about the organisation, go onto their website. All the details are there in their glory. hiowmasons.org is the website address there. You can find out all the information that you need to know.
Local radio for Portsmouth.
This is Express FM.
Yeah, local news and views. What's going on across our patch for the last 7 days? Let's turn our attention to Gosport, in actual fact, to the Gosport branch of the Southern Mariners Association. And to tell us more about the group itself and a memorial bench as well. Steve Thorpe joins me on the line now. Steve, good evening to you. How are you? All right.
Good evening. Thank you.
Steve, thanks for coming on and chatting about this. Tell us a little bit about the Southern Mariners Association, first of all, Steve. Just give a flavour for listeners tonight.
Yeah, so it's the Gosport branch meets at the first Wednesday of every month in the R&A in Gosport. And it's designed for... it's a national organisation, but the Gosport branch supports local serving and retired submariners and their families. And we're very proud to look after the widows of former shipmates as well that have unfortunately crossed the bar.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly the last... it's quite raw, I suppose, in some ways, the last 40 years of sort of commemorating the Falklands crisis recently.
Yeah. So they supported that, and we have a guest speaker, and one of our members was actually in the Falklands War that gave quite a humble approach of a submarine that he was on down the Falklands War at the time.
It's quite powerful stuff, I guess, and sort of reminiscing with the stories and thinking about those that have been lost.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And that's why the phrase, quite a passionate memorial for the Gosport branch in particular, as the Afrea sailed from Gosport on its final journey.
Yeah, yeah, quite poignant as well. And that's all to do with this memorial bench too. Tell us about that, Steve.
Yeah, so the bench was put in place 4 years ago now, and it was donated from the Submariners Association, the SPS Association, and the Royal Britannia Naval College. And obviously after over 4 years, they just needed refurbishment, so the Gosport branch have took it under their wing with some financial support from the Portsmouth branch of the Submariners Association to get the benches refurbished kindly through the Gosport shed.
Now, I know a lot of activity, or certainly from the to do with the Falklands crisis, happened in Portsmouth, but Gosport played its part too, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Gosport's got close ties with the Submarine Association. I mean, HMS Dolphin, as was, yeah, was the submarine base of the UK, really, for many years, until it was until the diesel submarines came to their demise and the nuclear age took over and everything moved from Gosport really down to Plymouth, and then it's subsequently moving up to Scotland to Faslane, which is a nuclear submarine base of the UK now.
Yeah, so it's quite poignant, and so it still plays its part, and obviously the tower's still there, isn't it? No decision's been decided yet what they're going to do with it, is it?
No, I don't believe so, no. I mean, I was part of the team that moved the submarine escape training from Set in Gosport up to Faslane, and the tower is still full of water, but I think it's a grade two listed building, so it's a bit of a bit of a headache what to do with it, I think.
Yeah, I guess a fitting tribute to all those that that passed through, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's an iconic landmark, even if you're not in the Navy, for the Gosport waterline and skyline.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, the Submariners Association, you had help there with from the Gosport shed itself as well, too, didn't you, for this?
Yeah, yeah. The benches were removed and refurbished by the Gosport shed, which we're really grateful for, and they deserve a great thanks for that.
Yeah. Now, look, I mean, if people want to find out more about the Submariner Association, Steve, and get involved in some shape or form, how can they do that? How can they go about it?
Yeah, if they just Google Gosport Submariners Association, there's a website. All our contact details are on there, or just turn up at 7:30, first Wednesday of every month at the RNA in Gosport on the Fairham Road. And they'll be more than welcome.
Fantastic stuff as well, and a great bunch there, I'd imagine, too. And swapping stories along the way as well, which is rather nice. And that's the thing, isn't it, for veterans as well, to keep in touch with those with ex-colleagues as well. It's particularly when we hear more of PTSD and that kind of thing. Because you're like a close-knit family, aren't you, Steve, really?
Yeah, I think it's just like-minded people that understand the traumas that you go through as a submariner, and you make black humour of it. But, you know, I only left the Navy after 36 years last November, and I think it's great to be involved with the older generation as well as the younger generation to swap stories and keep those old traditional stories alive, and obviously have a little tot of rum at the end of the night as well.
And stagger home afterwards, yeah.
Yeah.
Many a time, yeah, I'd imagine. But that's great, isn't it? I mean, swapping stories as well. And it's, see, this is the thing, isn't it? Because as people get older, we're going to start losing all these wonderful stories that can be told.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I'm a great advocate of trying to keep those stories alive and trying to encourage the younger generation to listen to the stories, so we can keep those iconic stories alive for future generations. Whether they'll be truthful or not, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, this is it, isn't it?
I mean, it's all these little,
yeah, I mean, these little anecdotes, isn't it? I mean, everyone's got a tale to tell, haven't they, somewhere, I would have thought, particularly you guys there in the Navy.
Yeah, I mean, that's how the Navy survives, really, on black humour and telling stories and Mickey taking and all that. And that still goes on. And it's good to see, you know, at the Submariners Association that happens both at a local level and national level, that, you know, we have still got that combined sense of humour to take it forward and keep those jolly tales alive.
Well, I guess you have to, because you're spending a lot of time with people there, and probably 6 months at a time in some cases. So you've got to lighten the mood somehow, haven't you?
Well, yeah, you have to make the past time go by. I mean, sleep and work is all you really do, and yeah. So yeah, the socialising is just really ridiculing each other and black humour, as I've said.
Yeah. Fantastic. But Steve Thorpe, thanks for coming on tonight, and good luck with this, and all the best with that as well. And nice to come back to it if we can at some stage. Steve, always nice to have a little another chat, but for now, thanks for being with us, Steve. Cheers.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Take care. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye. Steve Thorpe there from the Gosports on Manor Association. If you want to find out more information about that, you can go on to their website. Gosportsubmariners.com is the website address there. That's Gosportsubmariners.com. You can find out more information about that, perhaps getting involved with that, and pop along there to the R&A Club there on the main road in Gosport.
This is Express FM. Local radio for Portsmouth.
Yeah, local news and views from throughout the area. Thank you for tuning in and being with us here this evening. Let's turn our attentions to HMOs. There's a discussion that we've touched on in the past, and certainly making headlines this week in the local press from the Portsmouth District Private Landlords Association. Martin Silman joins me on the line now. Martin, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening, Chris. I'm good.
Good. Thanks for coming on tonight and chatting about this. This is, seems to be an ongoing problem, really, for landlords and with HMOs.
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of things going on, and they all keep bubbling up individually and together. So it always looks very active. I know I was quoted in the newspaper on three separate occasions yesterday, so, and they're all unrelated, but they're all HMO-related. So there is a lot going on. I think the main thing is the consultation. The council already have licensing in place for any house that has five or more people living in it who aren't related, and they've been running a consultation to try and decide whether they should bring in licensing for the smaller HMOs, the 3 and 4 bed ones. And that consultation finished at the end of last month, although I think they let it run a little bit longer than was planned in order to get as much input as possible. They're now reviewing that input, and hopefully, I know they had a huge amount of input, but hopefully within a couple of months, they'll be in a position to say, well, this is the consensus of the people of Portsmouth, and this is what we propose to do, at which point we either relax or start panicking, and we see what they have to say.
It seems to be a bit of a minefield with these HMOs. You say there's sort of all sorts of things attached to them, isn't it, as well? We're finding more and more, of course, houses now with things on lampposts lately with HMOs, and houses changing from private dwellings to these sort of seven-room houses, I think, basically, aren't they?
Yeah, I think I've got a very simple, generalised classification that HMOs fall into two types, and they don't. It's a spectrum. But really, there are the small HMOs, which are 3-4 bed houses, which are used to house 3 or 4 people. And then you've got the super HMOs, which, using all of the planning laws to your advantage, you can go in, you can spend £150,000, you can add a floor, you can build out at the back without needing planning permission, and you end up with a 7 or 8 bed HMO for the cost of a small house plus £150,000, but it's super insulated and it's top spec and everything else. And everyone gets really upset about the super HMOs, because who wants to live next to a little house with 8 people in it? I can understand that logic. However, everything the council does to try and limit super HMOs actually makes it harder for the small HMOs. So we're increasingly seeing landlords selling their small HMOs to these developers, who then turn them into super HMOs. So the problem's sort of getting worse, and it's a spiral of ever more super HMOs.
So it's not really a simple answer to all this, is there?
The simple answer is be very careful what you do, because everything you've done so far, Portsmouth City Council, has pushed rents up across the city. And what I mean by that is that what I haven't mentioned is what they're doing about council tax, but they're trying to limit HMOs or discourage them by saying, OK, that's a band B council tax house, so it should pay $1,400 a year or whatever the number is. It's got 6 HMO rooms. We'll class it as 6 houses, and we'll charge each room a band A rate of $1,200. Yes, it will discourage some, but what it actually does is the ones that are left, the rent goes up by $1,200 a year, because what else can you do? And $200 a month when you're in the cheapest accommodation you can find because you're at the bottom of the housing ladder will really hurt you. So you've got that. You've got things like the HMO licensing, which last time they introduced it pushed Portsmouth rents up 3% compared to Fareham or Havant or Southampton or Brighton. And, you know, we can prove that because it's based on our ONS data, because it pushes rooms out of the market. And when you push rooms out of the market, the people at the bottom of the ladder drop off, and the ones that are left have to pay more. So all of these different things, even before I start talking about energy prices, you know, in HMOs, the energy cost gets split between people. Either the landlord picks it up and puts it in the rent. I know I, as an HMO landlord this year, are taking a big hit in the hope the energy prices go down next year. But if they don't, and they probably won't, I'll be reviewing all my rent, so that'll play through as rent. I know Unihome, who provide a bill-splitting service, announced today that they're increasing all of their prices across the board by 60%. So wherever you look, you know, costs and rents are going up. And as I said, you know, a few minutes ago, everything the council does seems to make that worse. So I really wish they'd step back and look at the bigger picture rather than, you know, having this, we hate HMOs, what can we do to stop them? Because it's actually making the world a worse place for the people most in need of, you know, small houses, or, you know, the ones who can't afford a house or a flat and need to share.
I mean, the council, from what I read in the local press, are saying this is more to do with the Valuation Office Agency, who sort of control all the banding,
isn't it? That's the council tax piece, yeah. They say that because that's an easy cop-out. However, we asked the Valuation Office Agency why they're going after all the houses in Portsmouth, and they say, well, the council keeps referring them to us. So, you know, you can't have it both ways.
Seems a bit of a minefield, doesn't it? How's your sort of members feel about all this? Your colleagues on the within the landlord industry there?
Well, yeah, we have a whole range. So we have people with super HMOs who think this is gravy. You know, they're finding it easy to buy houses, and they're converting them and letting them at very high prices. We have small HMO landlords who are getting out in droves because it's just so easy to let to a family now as opposed to a small HMO. So they are either selling to a super HMO or switching from HMO lets to family lets. So the market is changing quite rapidly as a result of all of this. But, you know, it's pushing prices up across the board, which doesn't actually help anyone, to be honest.
And where do you see the war descending? I mean, do you see like landlords saying, do you know what, I've had enough, they're all going to pack it in?
That's happening already. We're seeing, we always have a turnover. You know, our membership stays fairly static between sort of 350, 400. But every year you sort of lose 20 or retiring or got to an age where it's too much hard work managing a house at 70 or whatever, and they sell it on. And we've had, you know, similar numbers coming in. I think the numbers going out are now higher significantly because people are getting out earlier. They're saying, yeah, this is just too painful. And then the next change comes in and they say, OK, I was going to stay till I was 70 or whatever. I'm going to get out now. And the numbers coming in are getting less and less because there have been so many tax changes over the last 6-7 years to make it less appealing to become a landlord. I think the government succeeded in what they were trying to do, which was reduce the amount of asset debt in housing in the country. However, it's the pendulum swung far too far now, and they're giving themselves an even bigger housing problem than they had before.
So it's one we're going to watch with interest and see what happens next, I guess. Something has to give here somewhere, though, Martin, doesn't it?
I hope something gives, because otherwise there's going to be a lot of people really struggling in the city trying to afford their rents or find somewhere to live. So, yeah, fingers crossed, live in hope.
Yeah, yeah, and a dire situation, but to say it. And again, the energy crisis doesn't help either, does it? So it's coming from all angles at the moment.
Yeah, and it's not just HMOs, it plays right across, because if the people in the cheapest properties have to pay more, well, it pushes prices up everywhere. So it pushes up house prices in the city, it pushes up rents in the city across the board, which no one wants.
No. All right, Martin, we'll watch with interest and possibly come back to you if we can in future weeks. But for now,
hopefully I'll have some good news.
I hope so.
A more positive story next time you call me.
I hope so. That's what we want. Martin's fingers crossed for that. All right, we'll talk soon. Cheers, Martin. Thank all the best you. To you. Take care, mate.
Local radio for Portsmouth.
This is Express FM.
Time for a profile guest. It's been ages since we've spoken. Got him to get back with us. Rachel Hall from the RSPCA, Stumpton Arc on the line with us now. Rachel, it's been yonks since we've spoken, and so much has happened since we last chatted.
It has indeed.
Oh, your mum as well. Congratulations on that. All well?
Thank you.
Loving life?
Oh, great.
Yeah? Good. Good stuff. That's what we like to hear. Rachel, I guess, where do we start? I mean, so much has happened. We had COVID. We dealt with all that. And I think we're coming out the other side of that now. Where are we with the Stubbington Arc?
Chris, I'm really sorry to tell you this. I think you've got the wrong Rachel. I'm Rachel from Stop Domestic Abuse in Hampshire.
Why have I got... I've got someone completely different. How have I got you, Rachel?
Oh, well, you've got me.
Wow. How does that happen? I'm going mad here. Rachel, this is the funny thing, right? In 10 years, okay, this is the first time... Ironically, right, this is the first time this has happened.
Wow. That's okay. There's a first time for everything.
Isn't there just... Well, look, I mean... Do you know, it's been one of those weeks, Rachel. It's been one... You said to me off air, you sure you're talking to the right Rachel? Yes, yes, well, fine, we'll just go for it.
Oh, so funny. Let's just blame the weather. It's the heat.
Do you think that's what it is, Rachel? Is that
absolutely
what it is? Yeah. Oh, dear my Lord, I tell you, I'm going potty in my old age, that's what that is. I've even got it on my phone. Oh, anyway, never mind.
Let's not worry about
shall
it.
We just,
we're here now,
I tell you
we?
What, Rachel, we'll cut that bit out, edit it out, and we'll start again. No one would know the difference, would they, really? See, you can't really talk about dogs then, can you?
No, well, do you know what? When you said that, I was thinking, shall I just play along?
Or no, that'd be cruel.
I don't have much frame of reference.
Rachel, you couldn't do that to me. See, that's what I contacted you originally. I'm thinking, how does she know Claire?
I literally work in the next office.
Yeah, but a connection there now. I'm thinking, well, what's Stubbington Arc got to do with... Oh, dear. So if Rachel from Stubbington Arc is listening, I totally apologise because we're getting the Rachels muddled up here. I talk to so many people. That's the problem, you see.
Oh, well, let's not worry about it.
Oh, how's things with Stop Domestic Abuse, Rachel?
Oh, we're doing really well. Oh, yeah. So obviously, we were successful in securing the commission service in Southampton. So we started that from the 1st of July. So we now cover Portsmouth, Southampton and the whole of Hampshire, so we are very, very busy.
Yeah.
But we are great. Like, things are very busy. Obviously the need is really there, which is obviously what we are working to eradicate. We want to see an end of domestic abuse.
Yeah.
That isn't what we're seeing at the moment, unfortunately. The need for domestic abuse services continues to be very high and continues to increase day by day, really. So that is very concerning to all of those that work in that area.
Yeah, yeah. And we've talked to Claire Lambourne, of course. Everyone will know Claire Lambourne from the service itself as well. And it's been pretty tough, hasn't it? And I mean, we're still getting horrific figures. I mean, with the other thing also is with the cost of living crisis too. I mean, that's mm-hmm. had quite an impact, hasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been talking about this week. So far this year, 47% of our clients have reported that they're experiencing financial abuse from their perpetrator. So I think that going hand in hand with the cost of living crisis that everyone is feeling is obviously really significant and really worrying, that there's families and victims of domestic abuse that are not only feeling the pinch as everyone else is, but also experiencing financial abuse from their partner.
And and that's the thing about it, it's pretty tough with that. You wouldn't think it's still, I mean, we're seeing a lot of it now with this, with Ryan Giggs, aren't we, at the moment, with all that sort of playing out and things like that. And I guess sort of court cases, things like that, really sort of highlight the issue of what people can go through and victims and perpetrators can go through.
Yeah, I mean, it's always this is funny wording, but it's always positive to see a high profile court case, purely because it shows victims that perpetrators can be held to account for their actions,
yeah.
That there is a process there to support them if they choose to engage with it around, you know, if going down a criminal justice route is what they choose to do. I think that it's important that we keep talking about domestic abuse. Obviously, over the pandemic, domestic abuse was spoken about a lot, which was fantastic, but we have to keep that momentum going that is at the forefront of everyone's mind. So it's not something that's going to go away now that COVID is just, like, is disappearing. Domestic abuse will continue to be a major issue in society. So I think it's just important that people continue to have conversations and continue to keep that level of awareness up.
Yeah, yeah. And what about yourselves here in this area? Because obviously you must be seeing quite an impact with the cost of living crisis and things like that coming through now. Things getting tough and people getting, are they getting agitated with each other?
I think I would never say that finances don't cause domestic abuse. They can exacerbate it, make things worse, make things more likely to be a serious incident or more likely, you know, when people are struggling with finances, people can turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms as well, whether that's alcohol, substance misuse. All these things can make a situation more dangerous, but it doesn't cause domestic abuse. So it is a worry, and obviously we're working in any way that we can to support the clients that we work with through this really tough time for everyone. We've been really fortunate to secure some funding through Connect for Hampshire, who gave us some money to buy some vouchers for some families to ease the pressure over the summer holidays. Because I don't know about anyone else, my children eat me out of house and home in the summer holidays.
I can't think why.
That, hand in hand with the, you know, just the cost of living in general, there's real additional pressures being put on the families that we work with. So we're working hard to fundraise to alleviate pressure wherever we can.
And that's the important thing, isn't it? I mean, and again, it's generating cash as well to keep the service continuing as you are.
Absolutely. I mean, we, like, you know, we've spoken about before, we are really passionate about having our own refuge that we own. We're continuing to fundraise for that. We've done really well. We're so nearly there. Obviously, we set out with a goal of raising £1 million to build our own refuge. We have exceeded that now, and but we've got a long way to go because the price of everything has increased so much since we set that goal. So we are nearly there. I think we've got about 500,000 left to go because I think our goal has sort of doubled because of how expensive everything is now. So we are really ambitious that we are going to be owning our own refuge in sort of the southeast Hampshire area soon.
Yeah, because you're expanding too, aren't you, as well? You're moving down the road.
Well, so we cover the whole of Hampshire, Portsmouth and Southampton now. So we are very busy covering a big area, lots and lots of people. So last year, just without Southampton, we received just over 10,000 referrals for support. So the need for the service is massive, and they're just adult referrals. That's not counting any children or young people that engage with our support.
Yeah. Now, I mean, some of the stats that I'm just looking at your website here as well, but one in four women experience domestic abuse, one in seven children experience it as well. Yeah. And us blokes, one in six men experience domestic abuse. Are men so open as women perhaps to come out and say they're being abused?
No, I don't think so. I think we have come a long way with male victims engaging in support, but we're not there yet. I think there was a real, obviously, there continues to be a stigma around domestic abuse that we're working, you know, that us and other organisations like us work really hard to eradicate. However, there still is a stigma around reaching out for support in, you know, for some people, and I think men do feel that. We are seeing more and more men engaging in support because we're being flexible about the way that we give support as well. Obviously, through COVID, we had to change the way that we gave support. We couldn't go and meet people in Costa or go to their home or do all the things that we used to do before. We had to do a lot of remote support. So, and we're finding that actually men engage a lot better with remote support, not sitting across the table with someone, just being able to talk on the phone, do that discreetly however they want to, So, yeah, I think it's, for us, we're seeing a lot more engagement from groups that we didn't see before. Mm. So the number of male victims engaged in support has increased. The number of young people that engage in our support has increased for their own relationships. So, like 18 to 25-year-olds, a lot more are engaging post-COVID. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And are people recognising it? Because obviously some people don't even realise what's going on, do they?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of campaigns, a lot of talk about it from senior politicians to things on social media to on the telly, like over the pandemic around domestic abuse. But actually, I think the level of awareness in general has increased, which is great news.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I can think back to about 10 years ago, since we're doing this programme here. It wasn't talked about a lot back then. You didn't see much about it. But moving on 10 years, we are now, which is a positive thing, since the law has changed in its favour.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we just need to keep up the conversations, keep having the conversations, keep being inquisitive. Is everything okay? Like, everything all right at home? What's going on? Do you know that there's this support available? Those gentle conversations, when you sense that maybe a neighbour or a friend's relationship is not okay, something's not sitting right with you, ask the questions. Like, know where to signpost someone. But it's really important.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's getting the appropriate advice and that kind of thing, really. Because I guess, you know, we're not very good at, particularly us blokes, or there might be some ladies out there as well who are not very good, but wanting to talk to someone else outside of the situation in fear of not being believed. I think that's probably the best way of putting it.
Absolutely. And I think there is a fear that, you know, of saying the words, because it makes it more real that that's what's going on for you. But we're here to support people. We're not going to judge you. We're not going to tell you what to do. We're here to listen, support, advise, and go along that journey with you. We're not going to push you down a road that you don't want to. We're here to make you safer and your life happier, healthier, safer.
Another thing which has occurred to me as well, I mean, you've got people checking people's phones and things like that. I mean, is that kind of a normal? Is that domestic abuse? Is that normal?
So, no, it's not normal behaviour in a relationship. And I think it's about, we see perpetrators checking victims' phones very often. Mm. But there's obviously, with like, technology is wonderful, but it also comes with risks and dangers as well. Actually, there's so many smart apps that perpetrators can install on someone's phone that, you know, track where they're going, track what's going on what they're doing on their phone, their activity. Mm. So seeing all the messages, all the calls they're making, you know, things, and they're hidden, these apps as well. So they're very sophisticated.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's scary, isn't it, having these, like, trackers? I mean, I can't believe there are things out there like that. But there are. To me or you, it doesn't make sense. But I guess to some people, I don't know. No, I've no idea.
Yeah, but absolutely. But things that are set up or invented for innocent, good reasons can be used to track. So, like, there's apps in which you can install on your children's phone so you can see where they are. Obviously,
Fair enough.
A great thing. That's about their safety.
Absolutely.
But actually, in the wrong hand, used for the wrong purpose, that can be... So if someone's doing that to their partner and tracking them without their knowledge, that's abusive behaviour. So I think it's not just about these sinister underground apps that are used specifically to abuse people. Mm. It's about good things being used in bad ways as well.
It's crazy that people are sort of thinking that way in the first place, isn't it? And it's just, I just don't get my head around it at all. It's bizarre, isn't it? And that there are people out there like that, that check phones and things like that. And particularly, you know, texting, see who they're texting, things like that, and saying, oh, I can leave my phone down there, but you can't, why can't? We've seen it all on TV programs and things like that, but it goes on.
Absolutely, and I think it's what is important for us to remember is not the people that are using these abusive behaviours, they're not some sort of, they don't look like evil Disney characters. Do you know what I mean? Like, they look like normal people. If we know one in four women experience domestic abuse at some point in their life, then one in four people are abusing them. So they look like me and you. They look like anyone else. Like, it's about the behaviours they're choosing to use. So, and I think that that's what's really important as well. They don't look like how you think a baddie would look. They look like anyone.
No, and that's the thing, isn't it? They give off that persona, don't they? That they're all sweetness and light, I suppose, but actually there's a darker side to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's different ways in which people can be abusive. Obviously, a part of our... We do offer support and a service to people who use abusive behaviours towards their partners if they want to change. Because I think some people really want to stop abusing their partner but don't know how to. Mm-hmm. So we do offer a support and a service to those people as well. And I think that's really important because, obviously, we are passionate and are... The majority of our work is about supporting the victims. But if there is no support to the perpetrators, they will just get another victim. Do you know what I mean?
So yeah.
It's important to be a part of the solution in that regard as well.
It's crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy that this goes on. And what about watching over, you know, someone's computer and things like that, if they're working away and they're looking over there to see what they're up to? Is that a form of abuse or is that...
Yeah, so there can be lots of behaviours online using technology that are abusive, and I think it's just about how that makes the other person feel and what the intention is as well. So I don't think one singular like those behaviours, if actually someone's like, oh, can you check my phone because I don't know if blah blah blah's text me or what, like, that isn't abusive behaviour. But actually, if someone's taking their phone to catch them out to try and find something to be abusive about, then that isn't okay. And I think it's important for us to have these conversations. What about this? What about that?
Yeah.
Actually, that helps us all understand what is and isn't okay, because primarily it's about how the other person feels about it.
Yeah, and that's where the difficulty is, isn't it? And where people are reluctant to say anything. They think, well, perhaps I'm in the wrong for hiding my phone and things like that or whatever. But obviously there is a serious side to it, that there could be some sort of control over that person.
Absolutely, and I think that sense of control, that power imbalance, because ultimately if you're in a relationship with someone, it's supposed to be a partnership, but in a relationship where there's domestic abuse, it doesn't feel like a partnership. There's a definite power imbalance, and I think that's really important for us to consider when we're talking about how that, if that relationship's healthy or unhealthy as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Rachel, if people want to get involved in Stop Domestic Abuse, I mean, is there opportunity to do that? Because obviously, your charity, aren't you? That's the thing as well. You rely quite significantly on funding to keep the service going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, so we're always really keen to hear from people. Obviously, we are expanding. So if people want to come and work for us, if people want to volunteer, if people want to donate, whatever it is that they want to do, I would encourage you to look at our website, which is stopdomesticabuse.uk. So all of the information that you'd need would be on there about how you'd like to be involved, whether that is as a colleague, as a volunteer, or as a fabulous donator.
Fantastic. And all the details are on the website too, aren't they? So if people want to get involved...
Yeah, everything's on the website, stopdomesticabuse.uk.
Brilliant stuff. And again, if you do find yourselves in a situation, is to get in touch with. There's a number too that people can contact you on, I guess.
Absolutely. So just call us. Even if you're not sure, if you want to talk a situation through, we've got a fantastic team who will be able to support you from the get-go. So just pick up the phone and call 0330 533 630. Our website.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is not to be, I say not be afraid, but there's help out there and there's assistance out there, and not be afraid to get in touch and go from there, really.
Yeah, we will not judge you. We will listen. We will support. We will not be telling you what you can and can't do.
Yeah, okay, brilliant stuff. Rachel, well, by default, it's been an interesting conversation tonight, to say the least. And it's actually it's quite nice in a way, because it's our 10th, who would have thought we'd been doing this show 10 years here at Express, but we have, somehow or other, I don't know how sometimes, but there we are, we have been. But it's nice to get you guys on the phone, because you've been great to us, you and Claire, for coming on the show, indeed all the other guests that we've had on the show over the years. So for me, thank you for particularly coming on tonight and not talking about Stumpton Arc, which is even better. Which is great.
Well, as much as I would like to, I do not feel like I have the knowledge base.
You need to see, you need to get a dog.
That's it. I'll be going there tomorrow.
There you go. And report back. Got to say, actually, a very good evening to someone who's been in touch with us before we finish the show tonight. Got to say hi to Lizzie, who I worked with years ago on another radio station Radio Haslam, Gosport. Lizzie McCormick, thanks for getting in touch. And, listening to us tonight in Leon Sons. Thank you for your kind comments. Thank you for getting in touch. Lovely to know you're there as well. Enjoy your cat sitting. I'm sure you will. Thanks to her. Thanks to you for tuning in to our 10th anniversary show. Yeah, it's definitely a memorable one. The news for 9 is on the way next. Stay safe, whatever you do. Look after yourselves. Take care. 9-9 now.